The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? Always live and the only show originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here, only on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubichek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown, along with the very indispensable Shannon McKerchie working the boards. You know, this is the kind of program that never gets old. I know I'm biased, but I say that because every spotlight teller assigns his or her signature style to a similar format every week. The tapestry of talent are regular folks armed with a kaleidoscope of emotions, envy, hurt, apprehension, loss, each used to characterize moments that range from triumph to turbulence, and every trajectory in between. But you know, there's one emotion that we look to for attaining a sense of calm from the commotion that can cloud our lives. Humor. Laughter is an immediate vacation, declared Milton Berle. Laugh with me, humor me, and be sure to smile. After all, it's only a curve. Our reminder is that humor is a tonic for mind and body. And if we believe Charlie Chaplin's claim that a day without laughter is a day wasted, then the next 30 minutes is going to be the most productive part of your week, because making us laugh is what tonight's guest does best. Ty Mahaney was conceived in Iowa, raised in Colorado, found his voice in Korea on Armed Forces Radio, and says embarrassing things about himself on stages throughout Texas. He lives in Houston with his beautiful and forgiving wife and 14-year-old son, a young man he embarrasses constantly, just like every good father. Now, Ty is the most recent winner of Houston's edition of The Moth and hasn't gone a single day without working that feed into conversation. I'm glad you're here.
I am so happy to be here.
This is fabulous. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Okay. Now, you seem to be an embarrassment to everyone that you know. And that's great. What's the most embarrassing thing that you ever did to your son? Because I've done a lot to my son.
I don't think... one time he was being kind of jerky in a store, and I told the lady behind the counter that he found her cute. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to die that day, but he just walked away in a red huff.
Right.
It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But he got his shoes anyway.
A few years ago, when my son's 28 now, but when he was, I want to say, 12 or 13, we're walking through a record store, the days they had record stores, and he turns to me and he says, I want to go see if I'm right. I said, what did you say? And he repeats himself. I said, I want to get to see you. Now, I looked at him and I said, I don't speak slur. I don't know what you're talking about, Josh. I really don't. And the manager, who is about 10 herself, is talking to another customer, and she says, So I said to him, why don't you go talk to her, because she tends to speak slur. And I heard them both talking with each other, sounding just that way. Right.
I can still understand my son to an extent.
I don't know. Now, listen, Voice in Korea Armed Forces Radio sounds like Good Morning Vietnam. A little close?
That is exactly what I did. I went to the same school that Adrian Cronauer did. I did a very similar thing. It was basically me in Korea doing Good Morning Vietnam with less action. Of course, Adrian Cronauer had access to the Temptations and the Rolling Stones, and I was playing Rump Shaker by Rex and Effect. Wasn't as good, I don't think, but it was one of my favorite times.
That record store I was telling you about? Okay, this is really kind of karmatic going on here, because I bought an album that day, a Temptations album, but I paid for it, and at the register, that same young lady asked me, are they any good? I just wanted to share that. Okay, now what inspired you to try your hand at The Moth? You woke up one day and you say, I'm going in here, I'm going to make a fool out of myself. What prompted you to do that?
Well, I do get up on stages and tell embarrassing things about myself all the time and try to be funny. And a lot of my friends said, you should try this. You're good at storytelling. Maybe you can do that in front of other people instead of us. So I did. And I don't remember the first time I did it. I remember I didn't win that night, and I was very upset and didn't think I'd ever go back. But then
but you're pretty passionate about storytelling.
I love story. It's my favorite thing in the world.
That is fabulous. That is so fabulous. What was the theme that night, that first night?
What was the theme that first night? I believe it was Altered. Altered. And it was basically the story about how I found out that I was a lesbian when I was 11 years old. I'd love to tell that story sometime if you want to bring me back. I think that's intriguing.
Yeah, compelling. Yeah, we're going to have to think about that one. Shannon's writing it down right now. Right, Ty's gay. All right, listen, I'm not familiar with your stories, but I know that I love the stories that you shared with me, and you've got a couple tonight that are very unique, and the first one is called Bloody Mary. Now, without giving the story away, how was it conceived? I know you were conceived in Iowa, but how was this conceived?
It was conceived by actual events. It was a story that I had told many times in my life because it's a very important part of my life, a very important moment in my life that sticks with me to this day. And so I decided I'm going to use this. I really like this story.
We're looking forward to it.
All right. My first switchblade was a Bloody Mary, or at least that's what we called them. It was the kind that sprung straight up from the top of the hilt rather than swung out from the side. I was in eighth grade. Chris and I received our new knives as a gift from Eric, who had been on a trip to Germany with his parents and bought them for us. None of us thought to ask how he acquired them. Surely his parents weren't involved. No, our only thoughts were, "This is the best thing I have ever held." And it was true, too, because we were at Catholic school, and the things you were allowed to hold were limited at best. We were presented with these gifts right before a dance. A junior high dance is among the most ridiculous ideas man has put forth. The only way it could possibly make sense is if we could power gymnasiums through embarrassment and bad ideas about reality. And there we were, standing behind the replica of La Pietà just outside our church, admiring our black and chrome spring-loaded tickets to manhood. Flicking the blades in and out, we growled like we thought bad men growled like. We disregarded the marble image of our deceased savior. We no longer needed him. We had a new, albeit unclear, purpose now. We entered the gym a little taller than we were an hour before, strutting on our newfound dangerous. Green and gold streamers webbed the air around us. Balloons shot quickly and clumsily from the feet of awkward not children. Some girls were dancing with other girls to Jesse's girl. Others were chatting in groups. All the boys lined the back wall, mouthing the words and trying to decide whether it was cooler to dance or continue to stand against the wall. The wall was winning. The wall always wins. I had no doubt about my coolness. There was 6 inches of it in my pocket. As I approached the wall to take my place among the other boys, two magical things happened. First, Devo came over the sound system, making my little heart jump. They're playing Devo, I thought, and it isn't Whip It? It wasn't, in fact, Whip It. They were playing Beautiful World. And Devo was my rebellion. Devo was my way of standing up to the conformity of top 40 crap. Okay, so there were like 10 of us that decided together to stand up to the conformity by embracing Devo, but it remains a good decision to this day. Beautiful World was my absolute favorite song at that moment, mostly because my favorite concept was and is sarcasm. I was caught up in that moment and stopped walking toward the cool wall. Then I did a strange thing, something I hadn't even considered mere seconds before. I turned back toward the dance floor and walked straight up to Karen, who was considered the most attractive girl at school. Apparently, my brand new switchblade cut the cord that allowed my testes to drop. I was full of hope and newfound bad boysness, and without hesitation, I looked up into her beautiful face and asked if I could have the honor of a dance. There was much giggling from the cadre of plaid-skirted neo-women around me, and even a well-placed "aww," which both embarrassed and emboldened me. I smiled the smile of a tiny rogue, squinching my eyes just right. She looked down at me. I could see that her face had softened from its normal, above-it-all stoicism. I saw the corners of her mouth turn ever so slightly upward, and then I heard her say the words that echo through time to this day. "I don't think so." She turned back to the flock and continued telling a story about a horse or some crap. I immediately strode to the punch bowl and poured myself a drink. Father Kennedy gave me a "it's going to be all right" look, and I gave him a look that said, "we're both going to die virgins." I finished my drink and tried to collect myself. Just then, the opening notes of Journey's "Open Arms" shot me in the face. It was too much. Steve Perry was destroying my heart with a falsetto meat grinder. I walked toward the gym doors, popping balloons with my Bloody Mary the whole way, trying to look cool as stupid tears ran down my stupid cheeks. I stepped outside and headed home, alone in the dark. realizing that achieving manhood was going to take a hell of a lot more than a Bloody Mary.
Right. Very good. You know, eighth grade, it's just one of those years you kind of want to pass quickly, right?
That's what my son's doing right now.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
How's he handling it?
He's doing all right by just kind of not paying attention to school and being the class clown. And I don't know where that comes from, and I get very angry with him every day.
But you know what? On a serious note, if we could do that tonight, on a serious note, you know, when we were kids and I learned to dance when I was about that age, it was slow dancing. You know, it was slow dancing. It was about tenderness. It was about movement. It was about touch. It was about respect. It really was. And now, you know, you mention that to anybody and they really, really look at you as if they're ready to enter a Twilight Zone episode. It's a pretty frightening thing. From there to here and here to there, funny things are everywhere, isn't just proclaimed by Dr. Seuss. He's physically represented tonight. He's standing right next to me, sitting right next to me, excuse me. He's Ty Mahaney. This is Hank Rubicek with Shannon McCurchy, and you are listening to So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, or kpft.org if you're listening online. But whatever avenue you travel to get here, online, in line, even if you're in a lineup, I'm really glad that you are here. Listen, our spring fund drive, I'm afraid to say this because I know what all of you are thinking, again? Yes, is around the corner, starting in a couple of weeks. And as much as I hate asking for money, you know what I hate more? That's right, silence. Imagine tuning in and hearing nothing. No stories to move you, change you, transform you. An awesome kickstart would punctuate the power of Houston storytelling. So if you want to go to kpfd.org and then to donate, tell us your form of payment, and then scroll to So What's Your Story as the program that you earmark for your donation. There's no way I can tell you how much I'd appreciate that. Or give us a call during the show at 713-526-5738. Jam KPFT with your pledge. Either way, I'm going to thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. And we've got some great shows coming up. We always do. Next week's teller is Dr. Warren Lee Hollerman, another one of Shannon's discoveries. Warren is on the faculty at MD Anderson. Shannon, give us a little teaser about who he is, please.
Warren is a fantastically animated storyteller. Oh, my goodness. He told a hilarious story at the Moth Grand Slam about going back to his hometown and thinking he was too big for that place and being humbled incredibly by the whole experience, making himself look like a fool up there in front of everyone. And it was great. He did a fantastic job.
Uh-huh. So he went to his hometown and... That's funny.
Oh, he went back.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm giving you a hard time. Shannon,
I do that once
a week, or, you know, it's like my tease Shannon fix. If I don't do that, there's something wrong. And wouldn't you miss it?
Oh, I would.
Of course you would miss it. Absolutely.
Well,
of course
to give you a little description, okay? He didn't even have the suit that he was supposed to be wearing. It was too small for him. So he had to pull off this eulogy wearing a suit that didn't fit.
Oh, my gosh.
So that shows...
It's a hilarious story.
Yes.
It is right.
Hilarious. Thank you, Ty. Thank you.
I got you. Sort of like Joe Pesci and you know, my cousin Vinny. I got you. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, tell us about the Houston Storytellers Group.
Well, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, that group which holds its monthly slops from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray, is hosting its annual Liars Contest this Saturday, April 18th at 7 p.m. at Dillon Second Auditorium at Houston Baptist University. Check it all out at thehoustonstorytellers.org.
Thank you. Thank you, Shannon. You know, that is a great gig. You guys should go. Seriously.
I would.
If you don't have
to.
Plans Saturday, you've got to go to the Liars
Contest. It's going
to
be a ball.
And that is the truth.
I have never not lost a Liars Contest.
Well, there you go. And that's probably the truth. The Liars Contest, Warren, the Fun Drive, and much more will be all over our So What's Your Story Facebook page, a page that Shannon constructs with more skill than the law allows. Shannon, you're a good joke teller. Are you a good joke teller?
Only if I'm not trying. So, no.
Well, here's the answer. No, but you're a good joke. The reason I bring this up is because I know that you love stories and you're a humorous person. And one of the things that I tell my students, I really do, is to think about a joke and create a story around the joke. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? For example... Should I do one?
Please.
Please.
Say, I'm on pins and needles.
You have to do that. Yeah, you know. Well, you know, it's always interesting how we really take things for granted. All of us know that. We take things for granted. And when we're given a second chance, even then, you just don't know what's going to happen. Life is just too perplexing and just too, you just can't be a prognosticator. There was a gentleman, 45 years old, who drops of a heart attack, and he's near death. And he sees God, and he asks God, he says, God, what are you doing here? I mean, I'm 45 years old. I've got a long life to live. I've got three kids. I've got a wife I love dearly. My life is fabulous. What are you doing? And God looks at me and says, you know, I do this a lot, don't I? And I you know what? I'm going to change my mind now. You've convinced me. I'm going to give you another 45 years. Because you know what? Why not? I can do that. I'm in the power position, and I'm going to give you another 45 years. Okay? Are you happy? He says, well, thank you. Well, this guy is so incredibly thrilled that he just transforms his life. He starts eating right. He works out regularly. He buys a whole new wardrobe. He even has a hair transplant. And one day he's coming out of the gym. He walks across the street. He's hit by a truck. Dies. And he sees God again, and he says, what is your problem? I thought you told me I had another 45 years. And God says, to tell you the truth, I didn't recognize you. Okay, just wanted to share that with you. Okay, now next up is a story called Omaha. Let's kind of just jump into this one.
Okay.
Because I know you're just chuckling. You're going to seal that one, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All That's right.
Good. Omaha.
I signed up for the Air Force the day Operation Desert Storm began. This was a coincidence. My enlistment was not based on any patriotism. Rather, it was due to a series of bad decisions and some prompting from a very nice policeman with some foresight as to where my path of idiocy was leading. My father was in the Air Force when I was a kid, as were several other family members. It was an organization with which I was familiar but never saw myself applying for. My distaste for authority and rules, coupled with a cynical view of nationalism, made me a bad candidate. I saw military members as ego-driven machismo bots at best, but when a man tells you that your choices are the military or an eventual, possibly long jail sentence, you tend to let go of your rebel leanings. I was very fortunate to land a job as a broadcaster. As military jobs go, this is about the least military you can get. I hosted radio shows in Korea and produced a television show in Omaha. It was while in Omaha, I and several members of my unit were tasked with recording a D-Day concert at the Orpheum Theater. The Orpheum was and is a beautiful theater, built in the 19th century with all the grandeur and filigree one would expect from those times. Built so even the back row of the balcony can enjoy every word and note emanating from the stage. We had several cameras that day, and I was positioned behind the last row. The entire production was moving. There were actual letters from soldiers read, as well as poems, and beautiful pieces of music played by the orchestra. One that stands out, although its title escapes me, was about the invasion of Omaha Beach. It began with snare drums that had been set up around the theater audience. They represented the gunshots and chaos of that day, and the effect was chilling and powerful. I could see its effects in the people around me, particularly the older gentlemen in the crowd. I knew, of course, that many World War II veterans would be there. But that moment made me see them not merely as a group of veterans, but as individuals who had lived through this thing we were now paying tribute to. It was humbling in a way that made me understand what it meant to be humbled. I noticed one of these men looking at me, and we locked eyes for a moment. He nodded at me, and I nodded back. When intermission came, people began to file out. I was changing tapes in my camera. When that man and his wife approached me, he told me that he had a good friend who was a combat cameraman, and it was funny because I sort of looked like him. He told me the man's name to see if there was any possible relation. I was sorry to say no. He told me they had lost him that day, and I knew that day was the day we were there to memorialize. I expressed my condolences, and he thanked me. Then, despite myself, I asked, what was it like, D-Day? It was a stupid question, but one asked with complete honesty and sincerity. He looked at me and sort of smiled while he answered, It was terrifying is what it was, son. There was no condescension or patronization in his answer, just the basic truth. I don't think I know any other words to describe it. It was just terrifying. I extended my hand and he accepted it. I don't know any words, sir, that can express my gratitude to you right now. Other than just to say thank you, and suddenly that doesn't seem like enough. I don't know that I could have done what you did. He put his hand on my shoulder and told me, "Of course you could, son. And I will pray every day that you never have to." We nodded each other once more, and I retreated to the bathroom so that I could just go ahead and cry without some old guy making fun of me. When I came out slightly more red-eyed than when I entered, the man's wife came up to me and grabbed my hand. "Thank you, my dear," she said. "No one has ever thanked him like that before. It meant so much to him." She saw the look of disbelief cross over my face and quickly added, "Oh, no, plenty of people have thanked him for his service, just never quite like that. It was touching. Thank you." "Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for telling me that. And thank you for giving him something to fight for." She appropriately rolled her eyes at that, but then smiled and said, "Well, don't you just always know what to say?" As she walked away, my eyes fell upon the posters listing the service members from Omaha that had given their lives during that war. And I thought to myself, "No, ma'am. No, I do not."
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love that tone. You know, stories are our lives, and our lives are stories. What did you learn from that story?
Well, it was, it was learning that the military isn't just one thing. It's a bunch of individual men. And it pointed home the how awful war is, how it changes you. And that it was that moment when I, because, you know, like I said, my military career, I was a broadcaster. I didn't really ever feel like I was in the military. That made me, it made me feel connected to those people, and it made me much more grateful and humbled by what they had done. And because it's, you know, that World War II was something you saw on TV as a kid. And, you know your grandfather was in it, or you know, people my age know that, and that made it very, very real for me.
Vietnam was really the first war that we saw on television. I remember that very distinctively because I remember talking to a lot of people about their experience in World War II. Hell, I probably knew people in the Civil War, right? I don't know, but the World War II for certain. But I remember thinking that, and your story, I'm really glad that you told that story, Ty. That's that hit me. That really hit me. That was a story that took us on an entirely different journey than the first one.
It's the first time I've ever told it without crying. So
really, Where do you want to take us with that story? Where do you want us to go with that story? Well, you know, you take us there and you bring us back to the present safely, but where did you want to take us with that story?
I honestly wanted to take you to that moment in my heart when that guy was just a guy. The most important thing to me that he said that I'm going to pray every day that you never have to. That's the,
he meant it.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah, he meant it.
And you know, cause he like, I mean, he, the guy that looked like me, he watched him die. He watched, you know, he saw, I'm sure several of his friends die. He made it through somehow. And what that does to a person, who knows, but, he became, as far as I could tell, you know, a great guy. He had a beautiful wife. They were funny. I saw them walking around laughing, and it was a wonderful day. And I want to take you to that place, that moment of a sort of realization how awful war is. Just when he says, you know, "I did that because I had to. I will pray every day that you never have to."
Yeah.
And how important that was to him, and how it's still important to me to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, war is a problem. And also thinking about soldiers is a problem. You know, our soldiers really are our heroes. But in the meantime, they're walking around, so many of them, with food stamps and unable to buy anything. And, of course, our taxes pay their salary. And a particular party wants to cut those taxes. And what does that mean? Does that mean that they're our heroes because they work cheap? Or you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's really quite disturbing. It's quite disturbing. But that was a really wonderfully, wonderfully poignant story. I appreciate that. You are listening to So What's Your Story with guest storyteller Ty Mahaney on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. So what's this thing about working your moth victory into daily conversation? What's that all about?
Well, it's really the only thing I've ever done that's any good. It's, I think back to my marriage and the birth of my son. Those were nice. But winning the moth...
I met your wife. She's pretty bright. You better damn well be lucky.
Yeah, she's going to kill me now. No.
She will, and she should.
Like, I was saying earlier.
She's sitting right in front of us across the thing, and she's... Yeah, just put the dagger down. Go ahead.
Look, like, I forgot to go to college. This is what I can use. Other people say, you know, I got a degree from what, Yale? I won the very first Houston Moth. There. So I'm going to work it in as much as I can.
Yeah. How do you work it in?
Well,
I do. I'm Ty, and I'm a great storyteller.
You know, it's hard because you tell people that you won the Moth, and they think it was some sort of etymology contest or something. And so... Then I get to start the conversation, and it turns out that most people don't care. I'm going to tell them anyway.
But you know what? Let's talk about that for a minute. They don't care. Why don't they care? Answer. They don't know about storytelling.
They don't know about the power.
They don't know about the power of storytelling.
It's true. Well, they do. They just don't know.
Because
know
I'm telling you right now, this is the truth. You know, I was raised in a home of storytellers.
Yes,
they were Holocaust survivors. They were strange people. Everybody had a story. And if you didn't sit there and listen to them, you were punished. Don't move. Don't get up. Don't move. I've got a story. Yeah, okay, but I don't have 3 hours. If it takes 3 hours, it takes 3 hours. Don't waste my time. But you came from a house of storytellers.
Yeah, my whole family, a giant Irish Catholic family, they're all storytellers. Yeah. And it's something that... It's like when you grow up in a house full of music and you become a musician. You know, you learn that, like I said, you don't know that you know the power of storytelling until you get out there and are talking to a person that doesn't know it.
Yeah.
And you just want to get away from
it.
But
it is very transformative. It is. You know, I love this class that I teach in storytelling. Shannon came into it once. You know, it's a class that's riveting in a way because students really never realized there was so much to storytelling. But more importantly, they never realized that they were really very natural storytellers. And they are natural storytellers. They're individuals who have episodes in their life that are worth sharing if they understand some of the components of telling a story. So I understand why people don't seem to care. And I think it's great that you tell them anyway.
I really do.
You think we're headed in a direction where people are starting to care?
I really do. I really do think so. There's a lot of storytelling outlets. I notice, you know, I'm on Grown Up Storytime. I write for them a lot. And they had to, you know, split it off into two shows because so many people were coming to see it. And I really think that it's becoming more and more of an important thing. And we live in this world where we can tell everybody everything all the time. Instantly, but only in short bursts. And I think people are kind of longing to hear the story
now,
behind
your wife
your
has got to be forgiving, right? You said your wife is very forgiving?
Yes, because I'm 47, but I'm basically a 12-year-old that has access to alcohol. So, yeah.
Really? Yeah. Well, you know, show me someone who knows what's funny, and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't, is Mark Twain's definition of someone with a true sense of humor, Ty. And you would make Mark proud. So thank you for your jaunty style, buoyant takes on life, and heavy dose of wit. I'm hoping you come back. I really do. Book them again, Shannon. Book them again. don't anyone even think about moving, because Scooter is up next with the Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Dr. Hank, reminding all of you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
I'd like to start this week with a request, and this one goes out to the followers of the three Abrahamic